This episode is brought to you by Neon Lights. Singapore's premier music and arts festival is back November 23rd and 24th at Fort Canning Park.
And here's why you shouldn't miss it. You can catch Mumford & Sons' first ever performance in Singapore, Halsey in a brand new set, Han, Muramasa, Nick Murphy, Clean Bandit, Aurora, and many more.
Interact with the art on display at Neon Nooks, grab a bite from the market, and lace up your dancing shoes for the Silent Disco, a festival favorite. Grab your tickets now at www.neonlights.sg.
Welcome to the Coconuts Podcast, our look at the latest and greatest reporting from our eight newsrooms in Southeast Asia and Hong Kong. I'm Todd Rees, and I'm the managing editor of Coconuts Bangkok.
And I'm associate editor Tara Kamaltanavis.
Hey, well, happy November. Happy mid-November.
Yeah, it's almost the end of the year.
The inexorable slide of time consumes us.
Right, where did 2019 go?
Not away fast enough, I say. I can't wait. I'm looking forward to the new year.
Yeah.
I always get very positive about the new year.
We all do. And then we make New Year's resolutions. And by like the third month for me, I was like, what were those again?
Yeah, I avoid resolutions. I do make sort of like precepts. Like, it would be a good thing if I generally did less of something and more of something else.
Just putting that pressure of the resolution.
As soon as I commit to anything, I don't want to do it anymore.
You must have been a bad student.
Yeah, well. So, anyway, so here we are. Oh, what was this week? Did you do, Monday was Singles Day. Did you shop? Did you buy anything?
I didn't even know it was Singles Day.
Well, I don't know what being single has to do with online shopping.
I know. And, like, is it just, like, to make people that didn't have dates on Valentine's feel better?
Well, China's really been pushing this. This was like a Jack Ma thing kind of invention some years ago.
Oh, I do remember this.
November 11th, 1-1.
Oh, 1-1-1-1.
Exactly. So the double ones, I guess someone had the genius idea, we'll make that Singles Day.
Yeah.
And how will we celebrate Singles Day?
By online
shopping.
By
selling shit online and having a lot of sales.
That's crazy, because you don't have to be single, though. You can just go online and buy something.
It doesn't. Remember the few episodes back we talked about the Love Day from The Simpsons?
Yeah.
It's exactly that.
It's like Valentine's. It's not like Valentine's is specifically any special apart from a Hallmark
card. No, they've pushed it.
Card.
Yeah, it's like a totally no apologies. Like, at least Valentine's Day has some history and culture
yeah,
and whatever.
Sure.
It's like there was a saint and it had, yeah, doesn't really, like, St. Patrick's Day actually isn't a holiday about just getting drunk.
No.
Like, there is,
as the
there
Irish
was a guy
would argue.
And a snake. Yeah. But yeah, so this is just a wholly invented, shamelessly commercial holiday.
Very capitalist holiday.
Yeah. Kind of, I mean, the same vein of Black Friday, although that really, like, that no one made that a holiday. That just became a thing.
Is that a thing in Southeast Asia?
No, it's totally, I don't think so. No, I have seen online some references to it.
Okay.
Because if you're selling stuff on the internet.
Oh, I've seen
the
online.
The internet's right. Everywhere, and anything you can seize on to try to sell stuff.
Right. I wonder if there are, like, physical Black Friday sales. Guys, if you're listening and you're going to a Black Friday sale in person, let us know.
No, that's how it started. It started before online sales. It started as...
No, in person, for sure. But I'm talking about, like, in Southeast Asia. Is there any, like, live sales?
Oh, yeah. I don't know.
That would be kind of crazy. So let us know if you're going to one.
Is there any Thanksgiving? Well, I mean, we know that there is for all the foreigners
expats
living in town.
I mean, there's, like, Thanksgiving-style dinners. It's not, like, people get together and do...
No, there's pubs that, like, you know, hustling some coleslaw and mashed potatoes and some cooked bird.
Do you have to stand up and say what you're grateful for?
Calling it a Thanksgiving meal. No, I think they just drink beer and watch soccer, football like they do every night.
Oh, okay.
Anyways, so the holidays are upon us. I'm sure we'll have more to say about that.
Right.
But
I'm sure there's going to be exciting and fun, wacky things happening leading up to the holidays.
Well, I'll say that what is fun is because, of course, this is the time of year everyone has holidays. So the fact that we are in these multicultural diverse cities packed with every possible creed and nationality means we sort of get it's like a buffet of other people's holidays to sample. Like you could go to someone's Hanukkah out if you wanted to,
yeah,
or
it's like Epcot.
Diwali. Right. So we're going to run through headlines. after that, you have an interview. You spoke to...
Yeah, I spoke to Maggie Q, if you guys know who that is. She's Maggie a very Q. famous Hollywood celebrity, activist, and entrepreneur now. So we're
You chatted about what she was doing in town recently.
Right. She came here for a gender equality summit. So we talked about like why she's an activist for this cause and why she flew halfway across the world for, I think, a day just to be here for this event and talk to me.
Being Asian women. Yeah, cool.
Yeah.
All right. Reliably docile Singapore has seen an eruption of anger from some of the people it needs the most. The wing-footed demigods who schlep their chicken rice, curries, and fast food through heavy traffic. Delivery riders have risen up ever since the government abruptly banned all electric scooters and other personal mobility devices from the sidewalks. They were already forbidden in the road, immediately putting a lot of low-paid food hustlers out of business. Once touted as a mobility revolution, the device's popularity had grown in recent years, with people zipping through the city-state on electric scooters, hoverboards, and even unicycles. But since the ban hammer fell, an organized campaign of delivery people from the likes of Grab and Food Panda, we say organized because they all seem okay with wearing their employers' t-shirts, have been confronting members of parliament out at their routine Meet the Constituents meetings. They seemed mostly cordial affairs until Monday, when things got really heated at a meeting hosted by Ang Wei Nung in the Jurong neighborhood. One unidentified man didn't mince words, accusing the 52-year-old representative and his government of demonizing delivery people and slow-walking the funds meant to help them replace their scooters.
You think they own our freedom? You think own our freedom? You see? And now we become enemies with you. We are enemies inside our country.
At least 50 people were at the meeting. Last week, the government announced a fund of 7 million Singaporean dollars, about 5 million U.S., to help the affected riders replace their e-scooters with something else. I think electric wheelchairs were even mentioned.
With us to explain what's at stake for these delivery riders is Coconut's Nurul Azlia.
So one of the biggest problems that the ban of e-scooters from footpaths has created is the loss of income for the many food delivery riders in Singapore. There are 7,000 of them, and most of them work for Deliveroo, Foodpanda, and GrabFood. A lot of them depend on footpaths to travel when they travel with e-scooters. And they can't travel much, they cannot accept as many orders, and that will affect their acceptance rate and their commission, because they earn commission depending on the number of orders they accept in a day and when and where. So if it's during a peak period, they get more. If it's at the high volume location, they get more. But if they cannot travel as much, they won't be able to accept as many orders and take advantage of all of these incentives that affect their salary.
A courtroom in southern Thailand turned into a bloodbath Tuesday when a retired cop whipped out an automatic handgun and opened fire on the opposite party in a long-running legal dispute. When the gunfire stopped, Thanin Chantharathip had killed the man he had been fighting over land with, along with one of his lawyers. The dead man's wife and another attorney were in critical condition with gunshot wounds. Tunin himself died after a legal aide snatched a pistol away from an officer who ran into the courtroom and froze, using his gun to shoot the 67-year-old six times. In an act of uncertain justice, that man, Thanakon Thirawarodom, was taken into custody and charged with the gunman's death.
So did the cops say how Tanin got a gun into the courtroom in the first place?
Well, when I spoke to the police on Wednesday, I believe, they were still trying to figure that out. But ever since then, I've seen reports that he sneaked into the courtroom while the guard was standing, saluting the flag, the national anthem that plays at 8 a.m. every day in Thailand. So that's what people are saying happened.
Hong Kong started the week Monday with the first of what have gone from occasional to now daily scenes of violence. Top police brass said an officer had no malice when he shot a young protester in the gut after footage rocketed across social media. In the clip, the black-clad youth does appear to reach toward the officer's drawn gun moments before he is shot. The 17-year-old was one of two people left in critical condition Monday after a protester set a pro-mainland man on fire. The spirit of resistance that characterized the first few months of the protests has been replaced by one of bitter rage. With once universal calls of Ad Oil being replaced by resounding calls for vengeance. Hong Kongers, Hong Kongers, Hong Kongers. Revenge, 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 crowds were crying this week, particularly as the use of deadly force has been on the rise. With us from Hong Kong is Coconut's own Vicky Wong to tell us how the mood has changed and why.
So the mood really began to change on Friday when a 22-year-old university student passed away in hospital. Just days before that, he fell from the third story to the second story of a car park when police were trying to disperse protesters who had gathered in the area. Now, protesters believe that either he was trying to flee from the tear gas at the time, others believe he was pushed by a police officer, but either way, protesters believe that police are culpable for his death. And since then, it has kind of fueled kind of calls for an independent inquiry into police accountability, and has also fueled a lot of the anger we've seen in the last few days, most notably this week of protests, which used to be a weekly thing. It's now started to become a regular daily occurrence.
Six people were injured when a suicide bomber struck a police station on Indonesia's Sumatra Island Wednesday. Investigators say that 24-year-old Rabai Muslim Nasution entered the police compound and blew himself up just before 9 a.m. His wife was arrested Thursday on suspicion of conspiring to plan more attacks over social media. Here's Jakarta Managing Editor Andra Nazri on how Indonesia is reacting to the attack and where the investigation stands now.
So as depressing as this may sound, the reaction here in Indonesia to Wednesday's suicide bomb attack in Medan has been relatively muted, and, you know, at least compared to some of the major terror attacks in Indonesia in the past. As of Thursday afternoon, in terms of the six victims who were injured during the attack, we know that three of them, two of whom are cops, have undergone surgery, and we're all hoping for their swift recoveries. Police initially said that the attacker, who's been identified as Rabial Muslim Nasution, acted alone. But on Thursday, police arrested his wife, who they said had been exposed to radical values and teachings before he was. And they're also in pursuit of his imam, who's a kind of religious leader or teacher. So this latest development may suggest that Rabial did not act alone in planning the attack.
And now on to Manila, where a nanosecond without Duterte news is like American media without Trump. The Philippine president looked all set to take a three-day unannounced vacay Monday for much-needed rest, according to his spokesman. Salvador Pinello said he told his 74-year-old boss that he really needs more sleep. The president, famous for embracing man's duality by both calling for drug users to be killed while slamming power opioid fentanyl, has really been hurting. He was recently in a motorbike accident and last month cut short a trip to Japan because of what was described as unbearable spine pain. Well, a few hours later, Pinello rushed back out to do a complete 180, saying that the president wouldn't be taking any time off, but would instead be working from home down south in Davao City, where he was once mayor.
How does the president work from home?
Well, come on. I mean, this is the digital age.
True.
Man.
I'm going to command everyone.
He's got Slack.
I'm going to send a bomb over.
He's got Trello.
True.
He's got...
He's probably using like MSN or something.
Yeah, no, it's all hot. You know, with him, it's all like...
MySpace.
Yeah, it's like, you know, Davao Badass 101 at hotmail.com or something. With apologies to our Hotmail. Our Hotmail diehards out there. Pinello gave no explanation for the reversal. But Duterte has been known to skip events and occasionally just vanish entirely from the public eye. In February, after he pulled one such stunt, he posted a video holding the day's newspaper to dispel rumors that he done died.
Where did Duterte go? He must have died.
He must be dead. I don't see him today.
It's like Trump doesn't tweet for a
exactly,
day
if
and we think
yeah,
he's dead.
No, exactly. If we didn't see Trump for like 1 hour.
We think he's dead.
Trump's dead.
Is he dead? What happened to Trump?
No, he's right there, like just
look, tweeting.
Look slightly to your left. Yeah, so them's the news. Hey, before we get your Maggie Q interview, Can we talk about Coconuts TV?
Sure, let's talk about Coconuts TV.
What's been your favorite? What's the favorite Coconuts TV feature that you've seen? Like from a viewer perspective.
Okay. I think this is an oldie, but a goodie. I really love the Cholos of Bangkok.
Oh, that's one of the most watched ones.
Right.
Yeah.
Just because it's like Cholos and Thailand. Right. Like when I saw that, I was like, why in the hell? Like, how did they get here? You know, it was just bizarre. And it was funny to watch them like try to be gangsters.
That was a really interesting like cultural transfer or one of these things gets like imported and remixed.
It was a cool subculture that I was like, I legitimately would never have known that existed in Thailand if not for Coconuts TV.
Yeah, and I don't say this because I work for Coconuts, but I've always enjoyed they pluck things from the ether.
I saw that before I worked for Coconuts. You know, that was one of the things that got me wanting to work for Coconuts.
Yeah, I think one of my favorites, I thought about this for a moment. The first thing that came to mind was a lesser known thing. It was this little slice of life. It was this guy who goes out in a boat into Bangkok's Chao Phraya River a few times a week. And he's got like this old diving bell. It's like a helmet.
Wow.
Like back from like before scuba, right?
Oh,
you see
shit.
This in like 19th century illustrations, like a big brass diving bell over his head. And he's got someone in the boat who has to operate the pump to supply him with air so he doesn't die. And he goes down to the bottom of the river. No light. And with his hands, he just searches. He just feels around the bottom of the river looking for whatever. He finds old antiques and old treasures he finds, because, you know, there's been trade for centuries along there, for hundreds of years, and being that it was a popular stop. So anyway, so it's a story. It's just going out on the boat with him. Oh. You never get in the water with him, but you don't need to. You just see him disappear in the water. And I thought that was really cool. I enjoyed that.
That is cute. Is the water like really gross though?
Well, I think, again, he can't see anything.
Right.
You mean like the cleanliness of it?
Yeah, that's probably gross.
Have you seen the fish? Look, a lot of you have probably seen some of Coconuts TV's weird and wondrous features that tell these untold stories from across Asia. Just recently, Discovery Asia broadcast their documentary filmed in India's far eastern Nagalands, which tracked down some of the world's last remaining headhunters. And today, Friday, kicks off Being, a new interview series. The launch episode is with Singapore's first transgender model, Andrea. She spoke with Coconuts founder and CEO Byron Perry about what it's like to be a woman born in a man's body, her transition surgeries, and much more.
And so what is the dating scene like in Singapore?
So the dating scene was very unique when I was pre-op.
Mm-hmm.
Because I was being seen at like a fetish.
Mm.
You know, I still am being seen like a fetish, but a different kind of fetish now.
Sure.
You know? But back then they just wanted a girl with something extra.
Sure.
You know, and there are a lot of men who have this fantasy, obviously for the physical reasons only. It just frustrated me because when I date somebody, I want to date them seriously. But all these boys would just take me for a ride.
Yeah.
Only to dump me.
Mm.
And the reason being, you're not really a woman.
So check out the full video on Coconuts TV's YouTube channel at youtube.com/coconutsmedia. And while you're there, feel free to subscribe for new videos coming every Friday.
And if you love any particular Coconuts video or one of our stories or this very podcast, maybe, you can now support the work we do directly at coconuts.co/patron. Become a patron at any amount, and it will go directly to creating original new stories, in-depth videos, in-depth features, food and drink and lifestyle coverage, and yes, the Coconuts podcast.
Yeah, this really does make a difference. I mean, believe me or don't, but we really actually sit around trying to think of what we can do to serve you, to serve our readers, our viewers, our listeners. It's like, this is what we do all day. We trying to find not just current news of the day, and not just fun and wacky, interesting features, but really a balance of what's really going to serve people living in our community.
Yeah, and we think about how to deliver that message in the most effective way, whether it be podcasts, video, or articles. Like, we do spend a lot of time thinking about what we're going to do.
We're throwing stuff at the wall here, people, and we're doing a mix of, you know, we're trying to do the some of the best practices of 20th century journalism in a 21st century execution.
Right.
So again, check it out. It's coconuts.co/patron.
Thank you.
Okay, and now, yeah, let's hear about this Maggie Q's.
Well, from kicking ass as Nikita to fighting alongside Tom Cruise in Mission Impossible, I don't think Maggie Q needs an introduction as a Hollywood celebrity. But what brought her to Bangkok in the beginning of November was her promotion of female empowerment that she said Asia desperately needs. I recently sat down to find out why she flew halfway across the world to speak at Southeast Asia's first gender equality summit.
It's time in the Asian region. And I understand that in the West, I've seen and I know women for many years who've always stood up for themselves and have always had a certain voice. And the fact that, you know, Western women in a Western society are just finding their voices now, especially publicly, means that, you know, if we focus on Asia, we're going to be way behind that movement. As Asian women, and I know for myself, you know, it's been really hard to find enough worth to be able to dictate to people how you should be treated. Because the truth is, people are going to treat you how you let them. And so if you don't know that you're more, then they're going to find you and they're going to make you small. And I'm at this summit to ensure that the women who feel that way know that there's another way.
Right. Could you talk about like maybe your unique experiences of gender inequality that you've experienced in the industry?
Well, it's interesting because my gender inequality started in Asia. So I remember when I was doing films here, I had been working for so many years, and then I do a movie with someone in a boy band. And I'll never forget once we were doing press, and this very sweet boy, but, you know, who had no experience in film and, you know, just sort of had lots of screaming girls that liked him. And they were bringing us all up on stage to do this press conference, and I guess I was too close to the cute young boy, meaning like I was standing in line with him like we are, and three women on his team immediately sort of like physically grabbed me and was like, whoa, like you need to stand behind him.
Like, you mean like you can't stand in the same plane as him?
That's exactly right.
That's crazy.
And I remember that day I thought, no. There's no way I'm going to live my life like this. There is no way somebody's going to tell me that I can't stand on the same plane with another individual because he happens to be an adored male.
Yeah.
Right? I remember because it was so overt and it was so really devastating and publicly sort of hurtful. I remember just thinking, I'm going to change this. And when I do, it's going to be on my terms. I mean, when I got my first Hollywood movie, the people who had managed me for years in Asia never called to say congratulations.
Really?
No, they weren't happy for me. Because I was not the one they valued.
Are you like, Are you
I don't even
now?
Have to, which is interesting. You know, it's sort of, I smile internally.
That's such a great feeling.
It is a great feeling because, you know, I never had to prove myself to you and I still don't.
Yeah.
And I think what's important too is that when those people try to take your power away, I see a lot of people live their lives in a lot of resentment. And I think that it's easy to fall into that because they're justified in their resentment. But if you live in resentment towards those people, they still have power over you.
Right.
And that's really what it is that we need to fight against.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And if for the people who are going through that right now, what would you say beyond it gets better and stand up? Like,
I hate it gets better. Yeah. I mean, that's dumb because how does that help me?
Right.
I'm still going to cry when I go to sleep.
Exactly. It still sucks. Like, it's still going to be such a
I still feel bad about myself.
How can we take our power back?
So I once had this very interesting conversation because when I was, I don't know if I was like 18 or 20, I was a kid. I was very, very young. And I was dating someone who became famous and was in the public eye. And I remember we had broken up. And my representative at the time told me that I should get back together with him. Like, you should really get back together with him. And I said, you know, it's over.
Right.
You know, it's done.
It's my personal life.
it's my personal life. And he looked at me and he said, you should really get back together with him. And I said, I don't understand why you keep pushing this. And he said, because you will never be anything but his girlfriend. So you might as well do that. And I remember thinking, there's something fundamental that has to happen within women where you understand that there's a value beyond what someone else is seeing. But if you don't believe it, if you don't actually believe it, it's not going to change.
Right.
And so that's why it gets better isn't actually true. Mm-hmm. Because if I don't get better, my situation's not getting better, right? If I don't feel stronger. And so I think being educated is very empowering. I think being sensitive is very empowering. I think being empathetic is very empowering. Mm-hmm. But I also think that, you know, we have to sort of add value, whatever that means in your life, whether it's a friendship, whether it's at work, whether it's that there's something valuable that I'm adding. That gives me value.
Yeah.
My animals give me value. My sisters give me value. But it's like you have to believe that there's something bigger for you.
Right.
And when you believe, it changes. Mm-hmm. It really does. But it doesn't get better just to get better.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's totally, I totally resonate right? with that. Thank you so
cool.
much
thank
for,
you.
Thank you.
This so was nice such to a, meet you.
So nice to meet you.
Yeah, it was a real pleasure.
Yeah, this is Tara from Coconuts Bangkok. Thank you for joining in. This is Maggie Q, and I'll see you guys later. Bye.
And that's it for the Coconuts podcast today.
You can find all these stories and more at coconuts.co. Better yet, become a Coco Plus member at coconuts.co/membership for unlimited access to stories, swag, special offers, and more. The Coconuts podcast is recorded at Noise Studios in Bangkok.
Special thanks to our audio engineer, Inigo Manthagon. The Coconuts podcast is written and produced by Todd Ruiz and Tara Kamol Tanavith. Our executive producer is Byron Perry.
Hey, thanks for joining us. Tune in next week for more amazing stories from Southeast Asia and Hong Kong.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining.